Hey, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, and we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Tuesday, March 9th, 2021, and I'm not sure, we had technical problems grabbing Dave, so he'll come in when he comes in, I guess. Yep, he's not there yet. So we're going to go ahead and do the market. We're going to go ahead and do the market report today. I just got a note from Dave. He has Skype problems, and so he'll be here shortly. Anyway, let's go ahead and say, hey, gold had a great day today. We had gold up $34 at 1718. We did have a high of 1722, so it is off the high of the day, but still up 34.40, so a nice day in gold. And I still think that we've seen the bottom now. Silver stayed strong in there. That was up 82 cents today at 26.03, only off 20 cents from the high. Platinum was up $31, and that was at 1174. Palladium was down 14 at 2,367. And again, just a little side note here where we see platinum breaking away from palladium, being stronger than palladium. Is this a trend? Not sure, but you're beginning to see that a little bit more. So good things, I think, for platinum here in the near future. Of course, with all the precious metals. So we had a good day there. We have the USDX today. Of course, it's weaker. 0.43 at 91.97. We have crude oil down $1.21 at 63.84. And the paper markets today, the Dow was up 100 points. It was up much bigger earlier in the day. 31,900. I'm sorry, they reversed that just now. It's a little early that I'm doing the report without Dave to say hello to. But
hi.
Unless he's there. Oh, he is there now.
Just now.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It's, oof.
Isn't technology grand?
Oh, my word. I'm generally a gentleman when it comes to this stuff, but I'm telling you, this program is just so frustrating.
Not this program.
No. Not financial survival. No, our power, our connected provider, shall we say.
You know, and there's nothing that we can do about it. There isn't anything we can do about it. But anyway, I was just giving the paper markets to get you caught up. The Dow was up 30 points at 31,832. Wasn't it up a couple hundred points earlier in the day, Dave? I didn't follow it today.
Yeah, it was up a tad more, particularly the NASDAQ.
The NASDAQ was up 464 points, 13,073. The S&P was up 54 at 3,875. 10-year yield pulled back a little bit, 1.55%. And European and Asian markets were quiet. And, you know, that's pretty much it. Of course, you know, all talk has been on the stimulus. And I was just trying to look here for something. Here we go. And but I mean, pretty much in the headlines, other than the NASDAQ rallying, you know, as much as it did, we've seen crude oil fall. You know, much of it is vaccine discussions. We did see some soaring home prices that are beginning to alarm the policymakers, of course. And, you know, again, people are beginning to see a day of reckoning on debt after this stimulus. It's beginning to sink in, like it isn't really news to a lot of people, but they have to act surprised now, like they didn't know what was going on in the past 20 years. But so a good day with gold rebounding as we've seen the U.S. dollar pull back. So Dave, I don't know. We have a lot of discussion and talk is about the rising Treasury yields. We saw that yesterday it had a pretty big impact on the tech stocks yesterday. And with the NASDAQ Composite Index falling into its third 10% correction in the last year. But again, it did rebound today. But with the real economy still depressed, especially the labor market, you're going to continue to see this weakness. And a deflating housing market maybe would undercut Wall Street's expectations for this year. Stocks and housing, we know have been propped up by historically low interest rates and inflation expectations. Tech stocks have been incredibly volatile. We've seen that. So, again, the exaggerated stock price moves in tech are amplifying all this overall market volatility, Dave.
Well, and we see all five of the largest U.S. companies in terms of their market capitalization are big tech. I mean, Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Alphabet, and Facebook in that order. And together, they hold a market value more than $8.2 trillion. The entire S&P 500 has a market cap of roughly $34 trillion. That means the big five account for just about a quarter of the benchmark's U.S. stock index value. Yesterday, those five companies suffered an average share decline of 3%, led by 4% pullbacks in Apple and Amazon. Tech companies across the board have been stung by the recent sell-off, with previous world-beating market champions, including Tesla, Zoom, NVIDIA, Square, and AMD, all down by 20% since the middle of February, when the NASDAQ hit its last record high. Now, despite all the talk of investors rotating from big tech-heavy growth stocks to cheaper value stocks over the past month, the biggest beneficiaries of the rotation have been stocks with incredibly high forward price-to-earning ratios, that infamous P-to-E. They include companies like ExxonMobil with, listen to this, a 278 12-month forward P-E. That's incredible. That's insane, actually. Disney is 60 times earnings, MasterCard at 46. I've got a better idea, ladies and gentlemen. How about gold and silver, particularly gold and silver coins? You're not going to have to worry about things like POE, ROI, betas, alphas, and all the other numbers that financial advisors tend to overwhelm clients with when talking about equities. So if you're interested, you know the number, 1-800-375-4188.
You know, I mentioned about the treasuries, and even though we've seen this spike, you have to see that the 10-year rate hasn't been this low relative to economic growth since, 1966, Dave?
Mm-hmm.
And there's even some folks that are saying that this suggests that the climb in rates may, of course, still have room to run. We have analysts that are boosting their growth and inflation forecasts with of course, everyone here in the States are on the cusp of getting the stimulus checks under this $1.9 trillion relief package. The average projection for nominal GDP hit a 32-year high of 7.6% in a recent survey of economists. Is that right? Is that the average projection?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's as high as 10% if you look at the Atlanta's GDP now, but the average projection for first quarter GDP is 7.6.
Isn't that a little high? Or?
Oh, now, come on. You're being modest. Well, I think so. I mean... Unless something's going to happen in the next 2 weeks, I'm going to be real surprised if it's much above 4 or 5.
You know, but just like anything else, they don't list these economists. Who are these people? Where do they live? Where do they work?
I'll have to dig deeper into that. I mean, I'm sure that, most of these are probably from the Wall Street banks.
Yep, absolutely.
Now, there are some surveys who talk to independent economists, like the Mark Zandis of the world. But, even that, I mean, even Mark's affiliated with the Moody's, which is a pretty big company these days.
So we see the global bond market that has been hammered as prospects for stimulus, and we've seen the vaccine rollout, of course, have spurred this optimism, extreme optimism, towards some sort of an economic revival. But everyone, of course, that goes along with higher inflation.
Yeah, boy. These are days I actually have to confess I miss our friend Larry Kudlow. the word revival reminded
me. Well, you can watch him on Fox.
Me of him. Yes, I see that that he is back with his own show. Now, we are talking a lot about inflation and interest rates these days because that's what's driving, or that's what the economists and the bankers say are driving not just the equities market and obviously the bond market, but also precious metal markets, which move either in tandem or opposite to these other movements. But I mean, now we see Fed officials are saying that rising yields reflect a stronger growth outlook. And, they're playing down the need for a near-term policy response, and that's emboldening traders to push long-term borrowing costs even higher, at least for now. Although Julian Brigden, who's president of hedge fund consultant Macro Intelligence, said he's bearish on bonds. He said, we just have too much stimulus coming into the system. It's going to combine the growth with a very rapid acceleration in inflation. And of course, while the relationship between bond rates and the economy is not stable, such a large divergence as we're seeing now is, between the two has been rare. Nominal GDP was less than 2 percentage points above the 10-year yields on average in the last decade. Brigden said in the old days, bond yields equaled nominal GDP, but now things are very different. But to what degree can you have a 1% negative real yield and 10% nominal GDP? As some are saying, we shall see, Melody.
Well, the Fed came out, the New York Fed's the latest survey of the consumer showed that the average Americans are kind of joining investors and boosting their expectations for inflation. I think, are people actually looking like this inflation that's coming? I think they're looking at it as a positive to some degree.
Well, certainly the Fed is.
Yeah. Well, they need to. They need the higher rates.
Yeah. Consumers will only to the extent, it's going to result in higher pay for members of their family, workers in their family. But, that comes with, the downsides, the downside of it all. And I think there's a lot more downside to it than up.
Yeah. Well, if individuals expect costs to rise, that they will, as you said, they'll demand higher pay. Landlords tend to raise rates. Businesses likely will increase the cost of goods and services, all pushing inflation higher. Jerome Powell last week said he didn't expect prices to increase to the point where they would move inflation expectations materially above 2%. I wonder what he's drinking. But that data showed that the consumers believe in. Well, maybe I don't, though. Maybe I don't.
No, we love you as you are.
But the data show that consumers believe inflation will rise materially above the 2% over both a 1 year. And, you know, sometimes when we talk about this and we talk about what they say and they don't, it's hard to say because it's just so much BS. But people make decisions. You know, it's so wrong when they just flat out and come out and lie. You have businesses who make important business decisions, financial decisions. People make investment decisions, and all they do is lie. I mean, so yeah, it's but yet it's important enough to at least say what they are talking about, so you know people can realize that what they are saying is not so true, Dave.
Well, the New York Fed survey found consumers' three-year inflation expectations are now about 3%, still unchanged from January. And that'd be nice if it were just that. Investors also expect inflation to move well above 2%, as evidenced by the levels of the 5, 10, and 30-year break-even inflation rates, all currently well above 2%. Now, the biggest factors in the increased inflation expectations right now are expectations for rent and gas prices. Rent jumped 9% and 6.4% in February and January, while gas was up 6.4% and 6.2% in those months. One too big to fail bank told its clients, if bond yields continue to rise and there's a smooth rotation out of growth and defensive stocks into value and cyclical stocks, the Fed will remain upbeat, which is a way to say they're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
But here's the point, ladies and gentlemen, the risk is growing. That was so many bubbles blown by the Fed. Something's going to burst soon.
You know, they still have to vote on this stimulus, and it really is a disgusting bill. It truly is. And, you know, it's just not this administration. It's all these administrations that have done all these stimulus bills for the past 20, 30 years. They've all been disgusting. They've all had pork in there. You know, they've all used one excuse or another to make people think that it's really benefiting them when it really doesn't, or a very small portion of it benefits them. And, again, it's all back to the same thing. And so it's really a shame. It really is. It's mind-boggling how they can get away with it. Nobody says anything. And for those who do say something, nobody pays attention. We'll be right back. Pay attention. We'll be back in a few minutes. Thank you for joining and listening.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csctalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. You know, I don't get it, Dave. One minute you had the consumer that is expecting a little bit of a more of a increase in pay that they're going to demand because inflation, but yet consumers aren't expecting much growth in their own household income.
Yeah, a lot of mixed messaging going on out there, mixed feelings as well.
Sure is, and that's what keeps everybody unsure on what to do. One minute they're being told, "Oh, things are really great," but you know, reality. This is reality where they know better. They know things are out there not good. These expectations decreased from January and are below their pre-pandemic level since last February. So even before the pandemic started, they weren't expecting much growth in their income. Expectations last month for household income growth declined for the first time since October. The number is well below February 2020's 2.7 growth expectation, when 1 year ahead inflation expectations were 2.5%, Dave.
Yeah, expectations for finding a job are also falling. And that's a significant thing in my humble opinion, with the average perceived probability of securing new employment after losing a job falling close to a percentage point to about 48.8% in February from 49.5% in January. Now, while above its recent low of 46% in December, the number remains well below February 2020 pre-pandemic level of roughly 59%. Now, the Fed's monthly survey suggests that Americans are expecting inflation to materially rise while their own financial situations lag behind. And of course, this just takes it into a whole nother level of the vicious cycle. We'll have more talk to you about on inflation and interest rates and jobs later in today's program. Melody.
Well, you know, everybody's beginning to talk and pay attention to oil. And we continue to see the spike in oil prices and attention on how the steady rise in energy costs might put a drag on this global economic recovery. And of course, it also stokes more fears of inflation. So we've seen oil surge more than 30% this year on this coordinated supply restrictions by these major exporters and demand returning from the depths of this pandemic. There was a missile attack Sunday on a key Saudi Arabian export facility that sent the international benchmark Brent crude above the $70 a barrel for the first time since January of 2020. We have seen the prices pulled down. We've talked about that. And the impact on inflation and the overall global recovery all depends on how sustained this underlying rally can prove to be. So the cause of higher prices is what matters, rather than the price itself. That's for economists. Rising energy costs on the back of strong demand normally can indicate robust and resilient growth, while a surge from crimp supply could also weigh on the recovery. So, you know, these economists at these two big to fail banks like Morgan Stanley estimate that oil would need to average $85 a barrel for the global oil burden to rise above longer-term averages. They say the global oil burden last rose above its long-term average in 2005, but with that backdrop of strong global growth, economies were able to withstand the impact of the higher prices until it went to 150. And that was too much to bear.
No kidding.
You know what? It was really creepy when it was, when oil hit that 150, it was in July. And I really believe that is what really, I mean, there was a lot of things going on, but that really did put the hammer into the, you know, the beginning of the collapse of 2000, you know, for that term.
Yeah.
But I remember I was in state college and it was creepy because you drove to, I was in Port Matilda, but I would drive to state college, you know, maybe to get a bite to eat or something. And it was just, there weren't cars to be found.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a ghost town. I think more like a ghost town than what, when everybody was in lockdown a year ago.
A price pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was strange, but so, you know, are we going to be revisiting 2007 at 150 oil? Paper traders, get in there, we will.
Yeah, now it'll be interesting. Certainly if we're headed closer to 100, I would think the U.S. is going to step up pressure on OPEC Plus, particularly with the Saudis, to put pressure on the other members, particularly the ones who are really committed to tamp it down on supply. Especially as, you know, vaccines get rolled out to a much larger extent across the globe, those are going to, I mean, that's likely going to spike demand. I mean, the thing now, even with oil rising as it has been, I mean, that's against the backdrop of suppressed supply and suppressed demand. But once that demand starts to go up, boy, OPEC can really play with Western economies if it chooses to do so. It may be, well, I don't know what kind of conflict. Certainly, I think the diplomatic channels will be, going like crazy. If that happens. 150, I certainly hope not. But stranger things have happened.
Yep. I think if everything else goes along, there's absolutely no reason why that wouldn't go. But JP Morgan, they decided to stop its digital wallet. And I can remember when they decided to do it, everybody was, look what the banks are doing. Well, they're going to discontinue its Chase Pay digital wallet at the end of the month.
No way! I thought they were getting rid of cash.
I don't know what they're getting rid of. All I know, these are all signs that nobody knows. They're going to dance around and do whatever they can to get the most money, to make the most money, and they all know what's happening. So you better hold on to your gold and get more.
Yeah.
Digits are nothing. But according to the option to pay through Chase Pay, it's going to be removed from all merchant apps and websites, and no money there. That's probably why. I mean, that's the only reason they would drop it. The notice said adding that customers could instead link their Chase credit cards to their preferred shopping sites or apps and to their PayPal. accounts. They want you to use PayPal. In an effort to expand the digital wallet's reach, they had partnered with the payments processor back in 2017, PayPal, Dave.
Yeah, that partnership allowed users to link their Chase Pay and PayPal accounts to use reward points to make purchases. You know, anything for a buck these days. JP Morgan's latest move comes a year after the bank shut down the digital wallet's mobile app that was started in 2015. To compete with rivals such as Apple Pay. Now, the bank didn't give any reason for discontinuing Chase Pay, but I think the moral of this story seems to be, don't throw your cash away just yet, ladies and gentlemen.
No, you do throw your cash away. You convert your fiat dollars into gold.
Well,
that's what that's
you
about. You All don't right. hold on to those fiat dollars and... You know, let the banks do whatever they need to do to make sure that they're profitable and you're not. They get
there
to pay you, they get to pay you a paltry couple cents on your $100,000.
That's what I was gonna say, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, it's just like, geez, Luigi. I saw a statement. This was a couple years ago when rates were down here at this level before, and I think the statement they showed me was. They had $100,000 in this one bank. And what they made in interest was like, for the year was like $2. I mean, I just looked at them and it's like, really? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you are losing against inflation. And you know, there's a lot. We can go to OPEC and so forth and whatnot, but it is going to be interesting to see how high these gas prices are rising also due to what's happening here in the States with the decisions coming out from this administration and the impact that's going to be felt. So, Boeing seems like. They delivered 22 aircraft in February, and that's up from 17. I guess they are doing better. Are all those planes manufactured here in the States, you know?
I believe so.
They also added that its net orders had turned positive for the first time in 14 months. This is good news. Boeing is relying on deliveries of its 737 MAX for a financial turnaround. Of course, we know that those jets were grounded after those two fatal crashes. Has there been any info? Have you read anything about this latest with the engine falling apart?
No, I have not.
Yeah, they're keeping that pretty quiet. So
investigation ongoing.
Ongoing. Well, they don't want to ruin Boeing's new orders and everything. They booked 82 new orders in February, taking its gross total for the year so far to 86 planes. Customers also converted or canceled around 50 orders last month, but the company's orders net of cancellations still came to 31 jets last month. So back in positive territory for the first time since November of 2019.
Well, what I find interesting, and as Melody said, this is positive news for the U.S. manufacturing sector, which has taken it on the chin over the last probably 40 years, but it's only gotten worse as time goes on. And we're not pointing out Boeing for any reason other than the fact it's a major U.S. manufacturer that fell on really difficult times last year, and was one of the primary reasons that the CARES Act last March included tens of billions of dollars in bailouts for Boeing and other airlines. Yeah. Now, their February orders include 25 737 MAX jets. For United Airlines, another 14 for what they call unidentified customers, as well as two dozen plus tankers for the U.S. Air Force. Singapore Airlines also ordered about a dozen. The rest of February's cancellations were 32 737 MAXs. All of them, it looks, by non-U.S. customers. And I found this interesting. Their total order backlog stands at over 4,000 aircraft as of the end of last month. That's a little higher than what was on backlog at the end of January. So,
you know, the problem I have with Boeing is here they get bailout money from the government after they released a jet, a plane, and it killed hundreds of people because they didn't disclose, they didn't educate the pilots well enough that there was issues. And yet they get bailouts. No one has been held accountable for those deaths. And it just kind of seems like things just don't matter anymore. Yes, they provide manufacturing for jobs and these people, but you know, the bottom line, it's just so wrong. Hey, if you want to bail them out, then hold them accountable for what they've done or what they did.
Nah.
And yet no one don't know what the lawsuits were from the passengers and so forth. No word on how an engine can fall off a plane. So, but yet they get billions of dollars to keep them along the hard times. And it's just, you know, it really is kind of.
No, it's disgusting.
Disgusting.
It's maddening. I mean, you know, if it were just the airline industry, well, you know, that's bad enough, but, you know, we could see our way through it. But, I mean, this started a long time ago. I mean, we can go back just, 12 years after the Great Recession and think since then, you got J.P. Morgan Chase that has been hammered with five major felony charges. We know what four of them were for. The last one, apparently so bad that the government has been willing to shed light on the specifics. But five major felonies for which the bank has pleaded guilty to. And as Melody said, no accountability.
No accountability. Well, we're accounted for this break, so we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
I have to get up and move to that melody.
I am. Oh, thanks, Todd. You know, it does brighten up the program, and dancing. Ruby's even dancing here. You know, Ruby listens to the program, and she was out there four-legged dancing. So, if people don't know who Ruby is. They think, Melody, you have lost it. Anyway, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Premiums didn't come down much, even though the prices, spot price did for silver. And again, I'm saying premiums are going to stay high. People are buying them at the high levels. And with a change in design coming out in June, the big demand's going to be there. And that's what it's going to be all about. They're going to probably wind down a little bit heading into June. This is just my thoughts, but knowing how the mint usually reacts and how they do things, they might be slowing down their current designs to ramp up for the bigger demand for the new design, or it could just go on as usual and no one will even notice, the increased demand for the new ones. But it just depends on how many they get minted and get their inventory built up. So it's going to be an exciting year for the Silver Eagle. So I'm looking forward to the new design, and we'll have to post information about it with our newsletters and so forth. You know, I just want to touch on this briefly, that we're beginning to see, after this pandemic, after, the lockdowns and all this kind of stuff, how work is going to evolve. This new hybrid office model is evolving. And, here's one company, Prime Therapeutics. They've unveiled this strategy for how its employees how they're going to work in the future. It could be a sign that big corporations won't need nearly as much office space. We've talked about that before, as much office space as they did before. The company said last week it will use the hub and home hybrid model, in which employees will use their home offices for individual work and then go to the company's headquarters for collaboration and socialization. I didn't know you go to work to socialize. That's the problem. You're supposed to go to work. Anyway, Prime Therapeutics, a pharmacy benefits manager, employs about 2,200 people in the Twin Cities. It recently finished a 400,000-square-foot office in Eagan in 2018 and 19. Now, under this hub-and-home strategy, most local employees will continue working from home 50 to 65% of the time. And, I saw a headline. I didn't read the article because it just kind of thought, here we are. Where employees who were able to work at home during this past year said they will quit their job if they have to go back to the office.
Yeah, up to a third, one in three.
And I'm thinking to myself, Dave, though, of all the jobs that I had, I've been self-employed for 25 years, but prior to that, can you imagine telling your boss, hey, if I can't work at home, I quit? Are jobs so readily available out there that you can give one up just because you're so spoiled at working at, I mean, you're dictating?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, boy, if you've made it to the land of indispensability, I mean, hey, good for you, but wow. It takes a lot of guts to throw that out there.
I know. I just thought the arrogance. I wish I could have said that, you know, to some of my bosses. Well, if I can't do this, I quit. And they would have showed me the door. But anyway. So we are going to see a change. And I think the importance of this story, Dave, is like there's going to be a lot of office space. And we're already oversupplied in office space. There's a lot of vacancies space, yeah. Out there.
Yes. Karnak the Magnificent, Johnny Carson's alter ego. I can see him holding up the cards now saying, I see a lot more conversions to apartments in the offing. Boy, I mean, first malls all over the country and now office space. I mean, from Class A all the way down. But a lot of these big employers are in Class A, the top-notch office space. And, many of them, I think it's safe to say a good majority, lease their space, although, you know, some of the mega company, most of the real mega companies own their own office parks now. But still, they have employees all over the country, sometimes all over the world. That's going to leave. I mean, I think beyond the impact it has on the companies or individuals who own the office buildings, what it's going to do to the tax bases of the communities where they've had, you know, longstanding presence, and what that does to, you know, city and school district tax base. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I mean, on the one hand, hey, I don't blame anyone who decides after working at home for a year that, you know what, take that 40-mile one-way commute and shove it. But, and it's a big but, you gotta have an employer who sees that as their business model. Because I don't see most employers offering individual exceptions. Because, I mean, you talk about the Pandora's box or slippery slope, whatever you want to call it. I mean, if your business model is to have all employees back in the office at a certain point, be it 5 days a week, 3 days, whatever, if you all of a sudden get, you know, a handful of employees who come with you with individual requests, I think it's going to be difficult for employers to give in to that. Because, you know, if you do it for one, you got to do it for the next person who comes by with a similar valid reason for requesting it. Besides, I love that I'm saving, you know, 250 miles a week worth of gas, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Requesting is one thing, demanding is another.
Yeah.
Heading into, let's see, the newsletter today, Dave, this week's American Survival newsletter, it's about joblessness and treasury yields. And you mentioned to the listeners we'd be talking about treasury yields later on in the program, and here we are.
Here we are. And, you know, I apologize in some respects for our what may seem like an overemphasis on these subject matters today and recently, but they really are news drivers, and because they're market drivers. You know, in the lead up to the Fed's policy making
meeting next week, you know, been keeping my eyes on joblessness and treasury yields. Now, even though 379,000 jobs were added to payrolls in the U.S. last month, a key theme from last Friday's government report was the fact that little has changed. You know, the Bureau of Labor Statistics observed both the unemployment rate and the number of unemployed persons changed little in February. Although both measures are much lower than their April 2020 highs, they remain well above their pre-pandemic levels in February 2020. Now, the main point of this is, we talked about it in last Friday's What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog, is that the BLS's monthly headline unemployment figures grossly undercount the real jobless rate. And in turn, just underreports just how bad I believe this economy is. The government's misrepresentation of joblessness in our country, which is repeated ad nauseum by the news media, Wall Street, and economists, can be summed up by these factors. One, the number of Americans employed part-time for economic reasons, i.e. they can't find full-time jobs, at 6.1 million, that's up by 1.7 million since the pandemic began. Two, in February, the number of persons not counted in the labor force who currently want a job was 6.9 million. And that's up by 1.9 million over the past year. And three, among those not counted as part of the labor force who currently want a job, the number of Americans marginally attached to the labor force at 1.9 million is up by about a half a million compared to a year ago.
Now, tell us what the implications are of these three factors.
Well, to me, it means that when the government says the unemployment rate was at a 50-year low of 3.5% before the pandemic broke out last year, it was really at 7.4%. When it was reported at the pandemic high of 14.4% in April, it was really a minimum of 22.4%. And when we're told it was 6.2% as of the end of last month, it was really 11.6% or more. Now, why do I say at least or a minimum of or more? Well, because the government's U6 rate, while much more realistic than the headline and I think irrational U3 rate, excludes long-term discouraged workers. And you know, we talked about short-term discouraged workers in those three factors, but these long-term discouraged workers were literally defined out of existence over 25 years ago. If you include them in the monthly numbers, the unemployment rate as of the end of last month would be closer to 18%. How's that for transparency, Melody?
Well, you point to one group of Wall Street economists who say that even if payroll gains were to average 700,000 per month going forward, it would still take 2 years for the labor market to fully regain the pre-pandemic trend.
Yeah. And I mean, you've got others like economist Elise Gould at the Economic Policy Institute says employers would need to add an additional 2.4 million jobs to make up for those that would have been gained had the pandemic not derailed the economy. And let's be sure that the economy was on the downturn several months before the pandemic began.
Well, we're going to turn back to the government bonds. And since early August, as we've noted on this program, the 10-year Treasury yield has more than tripled, from 0.5% to over 1.61% yesterday. You write that with rising rates, the Treasury market has been projectile bomb. That's hard for me to say those things. While government debt as of late. So what do you mean? Tell us.
Well, we won't repeat that dreaded phrase, but, you know, left me with a little sour taste in my esophagus. The steady rise in yields over the last 6 to 7 months have left those who bought treasuries at far lower yields scrambling to recover from heavy losses. You know, if you remember, prices of bonds move inversely to their yields and vice versa. Now, that's dramatically lessened investors' appetite to buy more treasuries at their current yields when the supply is expected to continue to increase as a result of rising budget deficits and more stimulus spending. In a late February treasury auction, the government attempted to add $62 billion of seven-year treasury notes into an already maxed out market, which sold very, very lightly and was a catalyst for driving yields higher. So today's auction of $58 billion three-year notes are going to obviously be closely watched, as will $38 billion of 10-year bonds slated for sale tomorrow and $24 billion of the 30-year instruments on Thursday. And then there's next month and on and on and on.
And I heard the Europe, I guess they their bond market, their auctions were just...
Yeah, I mean, the ECB's got quite a challenge.
It was bad.
Yeah, like
one showed up.
Yeah.
No
redemptions or a lot of redemptions and no buying.
No buyers.
Negative rates.
Well, you know that the spike in yields comes despite the fact that, of course, we see the Fed continues to buy the $80 billion each month and various maturities of these treasury notes and bonds that started in June of last year, Dave.
Well, let me jump to the chase here. That's true. With the world's leading industrialized central banks like the Fed, the European Central Bank, and Bank of Japan collectively holding roughly $23 trillion on their balance sheets, Melody, policymakers and investors alike are about to face a moment of truth.
Yeah. And our moment of truth is we're out of time. 1-800-375-4188. Visit the website DGScoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. We'll be back tomorrow. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless. Thank you, Dave.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye.
If I ain't got me, I'll be.